Thank you. Randy's going on and on and on. I'm thinking to myself, all he's doing is taking my time. You know, it's interesting. I had a friend who said a long time ago, he said, introductions and bragging, he said, it's sort of like perfume. You can smell it, but you shouldn't drink it. So I just have to be careful. My wife's here. She'll make sure that it won't go to my head, I guarantee you. Well, folks, I'm glad to be with you, and this is an exciting topic. Now, you might wonder, why NDEs, near-death experiences, for an early morning service when many, if not most, of the NDE researchers, as they use the phrase, they go to the East. They have usually adopted some sort of Eastern philosophy. And you think, well, so how do we justify doing that in a Christian church? So I want to do three things today. Let me begin telling you what near-death experiences are and how frequently they occur. You will probably be astounded at how often they occur. Secondly, I want to give you a number of evidential cases for NDEs across five evidential categories, and end with maybe the most important part of our thoughts this morning, and that is, what relevance is there for NDEs on a Christian worldview or for a Christian audience? What is the relevance of NDEs? You might, like again, you may have started by saying, I'm not sure why we're doing this in church, but we'll tell you that at the end, have some areas of application. First of all, let me give you a little bit of definition. A near-death experience is exactly what those words say, near death. The person is not, well, let's put it this way. The person is not finally dead because they're coming back and talking about it. But in a very select way, some of them, and I'll give you that definition here right now, some of them could literally be dead for a short period of time from which they've returned. You go, well, are they all dead for a short period of time? No, the majority are not. The majority are near death through the entire experience. But a select few, dozens, are probably more accurately called dead for that slot and then reviving later. Now, a near-death experience is an experience that someone has when they are, now not always, but usually in a crisis situation. And NDEs have been defined by one of the leading researchers as this. A near-death experience is a state from which you could reasonably be expected to die if there's no medical intervention. So it's a state from which you would probably die if somebody didn't rescue you. Now, having said that, in a few select cases, people have had near-death experiences. Very few. They've had near-death experiences, and they weren't even close or near to death. Sometimes, interestingly enough, it's almost as if, in other cases, they get ejected from their body before anything happens. Let's say you're driving down the road. If you know that feeling when you say to yourself that we're going to be in an accident, this we're not getting out of this. I don't mean alive, but we're not going to avoid hitting this car. Some people find themselves up looking down at the crash before the crash actually happens. So some are ejected a little early from a life-threatening circumstance. But most of them, most NDEers, are on the table during surgery, on the table during childbirth, on the table during anything, in a hospital bed, at home, heart attack, not in very good shape. And that is the state from which they usually find themselves looking down on their body. How common? In a recent book, this I give this figure a lot, and it's still staggering to me. In a recent book published by a university press publisher, so it's a serious book, written mostly by medical doctors and medical personnel, like PhDs who teach in medical schools, biochemistry and that kind of stuff. They estimate, in this fairly recent book, they estimate that in North America and Europe alone, 30 up to 30 million people have had near-death experiences or experiences of that ilk in that species. 30 million cases. So when skeptics say, you know, they think they're making a joke, and they say, well, I don't know about you, but your Christian God and your resurrection, we just sang about it. I love creed songs that sing through theology. And some people will say, well, yeah, but the problem with your belief is you require not just this world, you require another world. Well, that's not such a leap if just on near-death experiences alone, up to 30 million people have experienced them. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I was teaching a PhD course at Liberty. It's all I teach these days. It's a real privilege to teach just PhD students. Probably half my students are professors. And they're getting their terminal degree. 13 people in class. I talked for a little while about NDEs and some of the evidence. And guess, out of that group of 13, including one medical doctor, an anesthesiologist, he was also a pain expert, he had two specializations, but one medical doctor who was not aware of this data at all, after I finished doing the lecture, I had 4 new cases of NDEs just from that group of 13. That's how common they are, and only 13 people in class. All right. So that's about what they are. In general, it's a state from which you can reasonably be expected to die without further intervention. Sometimes you're ejected early, but you're still going to be in that state very quickly. Those two cars are going to hit. And rarely it happens when a person is not close to death. There seems to be some sort of ejection mechanism in us, and who knows who sets it off. By the way, there are cases where that little, for lack of a better word, that ejector is sometimes activated during drug trips. So you can think about the different sorts of things that could, you know, that your body's kind of saying to you, watch out, you're about ready to go somewhere else. You know, you're going to die. All right, let me introduce the evidence this way. 1982, I just left Tyndale and Randy. I left in 81, leave Detroit area. I'm from the Detroit area. And I went down to Liberty, but before I went down, I went to University of Connecticut. Well, I was invited before I went down to University of Connecticut in 1982, and they had a gathering of the top, at the University of Connecticut, were the top 6 or 8 near-death researchers in the world. Today, huge names in the literature. And we sat around, it was not a conference, we didn't lecture at each other. We sat around, and the main question we discussed, or one of them, some of them were interested in how do NDEs change people's lives, our last topic this morning. Some of them were interested in evidence. You'd be surprised how few wanted evidence. Many of them just wondered why they happen and what's the relationship between them and medical events. They were medical personnel. But here's what we said at this time. They said an ideal case for evidence would be one where a person was hooked up to an EEG, brainwave, EKG, heart, and had an evidential experience in the room, outside the room, down the hall, down the street, because they would sometimes be up above their body, they would say, and then go out the hospital and they would see an accident down the street or something like that. They would give data. Well, of course, we know when the person coded. We know when they were brought back. You can get a police report of the accident down the street. So you can kind of see if that accident happened during the slot when the person was, theoretically, flat brain, flat heart, according to the machines. But they'd have to be hooked up to EEG and EKG. Well, I'm just telling you, when people are near death, they are not generally hooked up, maybe, probably most of all, not to either one, maybe heart, not to both. So how would you ever get this data? And as we sat there in 1982, we thought, well, wow, it would sure be great to get this together to see what these people are experiencing when they are saying that they're kind of floating around. Well, guess what happened? Right about that time while we were talking, a medical discovery occurred, we didn't have to worry about being hooked up to EG and EKG because it was discovered there are different species of cardiac arrest. But with at least one of the major varieties, if you have this variety of cardiac arrest, just like the word says, your heart stops beating. Okay, that's one of them. They know you had a cardiac arrest, they know your heart doesn't beat by definition. All right, in experiments, on an average of 14.4 seconds later, your brain's not working. So if you report something from just say 2 minutes later, you are flat brain, flat heart. No hookup, don't need hookups. Now you're flat brain, flat heart. What evidence do you have to bring to the table? I recently had a debate, a written debate, in a major secular book, Blackwell's, out of Oxford, which almost has the status of an Oxford or Cambridge University Press. And I debated a medical doctor who had three doctor's degrees. Medical doctor, he had a doctor of science degree, a popular European degree, and he had a DPhil from Oxford, and he did his dissertation against NDEs. And his dissertation was later published by Oxford University Press. Heady guy. But his conclusion, I'd already read his material, and he just was wrong in what he was saying. And here's what he claimed. We don't have evidential cases. Yeah, there's some anecdotal ones, but this one's stupid, this one. And he largely used cases from 20 years ago. He wasn't up on the latest literature. So I said, they wanted somebody to debate him. I'll debate him. And in this article, I cited 300 evidential NDE cases. Now, maybe 200 of them aren't solid evidence. They're just like, oh, really? You saw that? Wow, cool. Just sort of decent evidence. But dozens of them are really heavy evidence. In fact, 40 of them are either from the flat brain, flat heart. Now, I have to say, a neurologist said to me one time, you can say flat brain, flat heart, but say measurably flat brain, flat heart, is if we can believe the machines, which that's all we do today, right? We believe the medical machines. But measurably flat brain, flat heart, or they were under general anesthesia. And general anesthesia is not like having your tooth pulled and you can say, oh, I heard your discussion the whole time in the room, not with general anesthesia. So there's 40 of those 100 really evidential cases, 40 of them are either measurably flat brain, flat heart, or under general anesthesia. And here's some of the cases. Now, here's the five categories that I would put the evidence into. And different people like different cases, and like everyone's different. And they like different kinds of evidence in different kinds of circumstances. Some critics like evidence in the room, in the operating room, or in the hospital room, or at home in a particular room. They like the inside arguments. More popular are those who want corroboration at a distance. They see the car accident two blocks. You know, the ceiling's relatively low here for what this could be from a big city building with, you know, many floors. And you could be out over there and see an accident 100 yards down the road. But how could you? We know you're out at this time. We know the EMT's got you back at this time. So we've got all that. So outside evidence. Third case, NDEs in the blind. Really interesting. This is congenitally blind. And they've never seen anything except what they saw during the NDE, and then they went right back to being blind. So their only data is during this, you know, multi-minute event. The fourth and fifth one I call Twilight Zone cases. There are a few cases of living, healthy, conscious people who observe the NDE of the dying NDEer. Like a medical doctor, or one case, a nurse, she wrote it up for a nursing journal. And I'll give you examples of each of these. The last one may be the most evidential of all. And I'll wait till I get there to tell you some cases. It truly is Twilight Zone. Okay, inside the room. Here's inside the room cases. One of my favorites, a woman said, I left my body, I was up above my body, I watched him working on it, and she said, in the room, there was a 6 to 8 foot tall medical device. And she said, I'm OCD, and I have a tendency to memorize large numbers. And on the top of that machine that you can't see from the ground, there is a 12-digit code that's riveted into the machine so that the hospital knows where the respiratory machine is, so they know where the EEG is, or where they want to keep track. And she said, I memorized that number. And when she came to, she told the nurse, write this down. I'm going to tell you, write it down. And she gave her the 12-digit number, 1, 6, 7, 4, whatever it was, gave the 12-digit number. The nurse wrote it down, put it in her purse, and ignored it. A little while later, they came in to move that machine out of the room, and the nurse said, whoa, wait a minute. And they sent a guy up on a ladder to look down on top, and she pulled her number out, and she said, read it to me. And the guy read it, and the woman had all 12 numbers correct in order. Now, you can figure out the odds, and that happening by chance. She was right. And she called out, well, my teaching assistant, my research assistant, actually, is a PhD candidate at Liberty. And with magic fingers, this generation, they can find things so quickly on the internet. I'm so bad at it. He went online and located the nurse. And he said, hey, did it go down just like that story said? She said, just like the story said. She goes, but I want to add something. She said, there was a second nurse in the room, so there are two of us in there. And she said, secondly, figure this out, because it's the end of the message today. She said, it's the most important event that has ever happened to me in my life. I go, why? Why would that be most important? I will tell you, NDEers are usually forever transformed in a way you can't imagine. They'll say this event is the most real event that ever happened to them. Well, here's one. Here's a real testimony. A New Testament scholar, he said, told me just recently, he said, my wife had an ND, and he said, I'd never asked her much about it. I don't know if she thought it changed her life or not. 3 days later, he emailed me. He said, I asked her. And she said, before the experience, they're Christians, but she said, before the experience, I was 50% convinced I had a soul, the wife. She said, after my NDE, I am 100% convinced, and there's no possible way you could talk me out of it, because I was there. I was in the other world. That's the way they talk. And by the way, two of the ones in my room, I told you I got four new near-death experiences from the 13 people in the room. One of them is an Indian student, a THM from Dallas, who has an MA in philosophy from India, and he's doing a PhD. He fell out of a tree when he was 14 years old. He fell 25 feet and landed on his head, split his head open. Everybody was sure he was dead, and he watched the whole thing from up in the tree. And I was just playing around with him in class, and I said, oh, you were up in the tree. He said, nope, I was hovering over my body. I mean, they make distinctions like that. He said, my body was down there. I wasn't in the tree at all. Body down there, I watched mom crying. It was mildly evidential. He could report what his mom said. He kept saying to himself, he said, she couldn't hear me, but he kept saying, mom, I'm not dead, I'm fine. Don't worry about me, I'm fine. But of course, nobody could hear him, and she was still weeping over his body, and he's up here. And he bent his head forward. He was thin on top. And he bent his head forward. He showed the class to go, see, I really fell out of the tree. He's got a big scar on top of his head. And so another gal in class, a woman from Syria, we had a very diverse class from like 10 different nations out of those 13 people. And she had a near-death experience. And I asked both of them, I said, could I ever talk you out of that experience? They both looked at each other and they go, there's no possible way. Even if I brought evidence against it, no, I know where I was. And this, they often say something like this, for you to talk me out of this experience would be like you trying to convince me I didn't go to Kroger last night to buy a loaf of bread. I don't care if anybody saw me at Kroger or not. I know I was at Kroger, and that's how sure I am that I had the near-death experience. They said, you can't talk me out of it. All right, here's the kinds of evidence. In the room, I gave you an example, 12 digits. Here's another one from in the room. This woman's arguing with her doctor after the surgery, and he said, I'm telling you, We checked you for that. The machine was right in the room. She said, you didn't check me for that. He said, ma'am, don't tell me my business. The machine was right there in the room. She said, go check it. Because she was looking down from above. She said, you didn't get it. He said, excuse me. Went down, checked it. Guess what? The machine was there, wasn't plugged in. How'd she know that? She said, I saw it. I saw the plug out of the machine, only I was up above it. He goes, you're right. You're right, it was not plugged in. Here's another one, real quick ones that are in the area. One guy was up above his body, and you know, there's surgical wards next to each other in hospitals. And he drifted through the wall in the next room and watched a man having his leg amputated. He watched the procedure and told them what they were doing. So those are some inside the room ones. Here's a couple outside the room ones. And I like these, and I like the Twilight Zone one at the end. They're my favorites. In one distance case, a man who lived in Florida went up to Milwaukee. He and his wife went up to Milwaukee to have surgery. And he had a house sitter, because they knew they'd be up there for X amount of time. And his best friend sat in his house in Florida. He coded, and he was flat brain, flat heart for 30 minutes. 30 minutes. And oftentimes, the person goes to where their family or friends are. Like if someone's in a waiting room three floors away, they get taken to that. He zipped in and looked in on his buddy, told what his buddy was doing, where he was in the house, drew a picture of it because it was very odd what he was doing. And he said, I noticed you were putting the mail on the dining room table, which is totally fine. But I saw we have a journal there from Amsterdam. It was just a really distinctive European cover, and I wondered why. And then he's back in his body. 1,250 miles away, he looked in on his friend. Later, he drew a picture of what his friend was doing, showed it to him, and when they got home, they found the journal from Amsterdam on the dining room table. So there's multiple attestation from a long way away. Here's another one. This is a real cute one. There is such a thing as near-death humor. Some of these are really funny, the stories they tell. And here's one of those. A woman was being operated on, and as soon as they took her away, as you know, you've probably done it yourself, their family went down to the cafeteria to get a bite to eat because they knew the surgery was going to be a while. When they took her away, her father and two grandmothers went down to the cafeteria. Her father was a smoker. One grandmother used to be a smoker, and the second grandmother never had one in her life. And she'd always, whether in jest or seriously, whenever anybody talks smoking, she goes, I'll never have one of those cancer sticks in my mouth. You'll never see me. I hate that stuff. Why would you put yourself in an early grave smoking stupid? And that's what they identified this grandmother with all the time. So she's in this state, and she kind of zooms into where her folks are in the cafeteria. And they're all kind of nervous, serious surgery. And her dad pushes away from the table, and he says, I'm going to go outside and have a smoke. The grandmother that used to smoke, she said, I'm going with you. Do you have an extra cigarette? And the grandmother, who gave the cancer stick warning all the time, said, I need one too. They went outside, and she watched all three of them smoke. When they came to, she goes, were you smoking? Yes, honey, I was smoking. And she watched it all during that state. Now, those are outside the body. Okay, the blind ones are not, there's not too many of them that are seriously evidential. So I'll just say some people who never saw things before in their life or since saw some things that were evidenced, but not incredibly evidenced. Okay. Last two Twilight Zone categories. Living healthy people see what the NDE is seeing. I'll tell you two cases real fast. One, a family, five members, are around their grandmother/mother as she's lying in bed. Presumably, she's quite elderly. Presumably, she's going to die pretty soon. And while all five members are sitting around the bed trying to be quiet, all of a sudden, there's a light orb that appears over the bed. And they're all going, yeah, yeah. And grandma's body is on her back, laying on the pillow, and something comes out of her body that looks like they described later could only be a spirit. But we could see it. But her body was still there. And they said, they kind of explained, it was kind of an interesting explanation. They said, inasmuch as spirits can have faces, they said, grandma looked up and saw the orb, and she was elated. She wanted to go, and she puts her hands up to go. And they said, the body's still on the bed. The spirit starts going up, and the light elongates into a tunnel, and all five are watching. And grandma gets up there so far, disappears, but five people saw it. Pretty interesting. Here's another one. A boy, I picture him being maybe 14. He was riding his bike, and he got hit by a car, and he got killed. They called his mom at work and said, I know it's going to be hard, but you have to come down and identify the body. She was heartbroken. She's driving to the scene, but she also remembered that her son and her daughter are very close, but her daughter's a deaf mute. And she said, how am I going to sign to her and tell her her brother's dead? So the mother goes and identifies the body. It is her son. She goes home, and her daughter's sitting on the couch in kind of a, she's staring straight ahead, and she's staring. And mom signs to her and says, your brother's dead. And she said, I know. I was with him. She goes, what do you mean? She goes, I was just around the house minding my own business, and all of a sudden, I was with them, and we went up this tunnel together, and we went to this place where there were, I don't know, angels, I don't know what they were. We're standing there together. And they said to me, the young lady, they said, he's staying, i.e., he's dead. He's staying, you're going back. I don't want to go back, I want to stay with him. You're going back, he's staying. And before they separated them, and before she was sent back, you know how kids play with each other, they had been praying for their aunt to get pregnant. It was a family prayer for their aunt to get pregnant. And the brother looked over at his sister and said, and all talk in Indies is always telepathic. It's never with moving lips. It's always with a thought that sounds exactly like someone said it. And he said to her, I know something that you don't know. Aunt so-and-so is pregnant. And she goes, cool. And then, got to get out of here. She's gone. She's back in her living room. He stays. He's dead. So mom's signing all this to her. And she says, yeah, I was with him. He said, honey, how could you have been with him? I don't know, but Aunt Sadie's pregnant. Really? Yep. And she was. So there's an evidential one, where a doubly evidential, where a living person shared it plus had this information. Now here's the Twilight Zone one. Near-death people are not dead, except they could be for 30 minutes while there's no brain, no heart, but when they come to again, they're only near-death. But sometimes you're generally always drawn to a loved one. And it's usually very, very close friends, deceased parents, deceased grandparents, deceased best friends, and you're with them. And sometimes these people who are deceased have been dead for 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, 10 years, and they impart information to the person. Like, son is talking to his father who's been dead for 10 years, and the father says, by the way, son, I hate to tell you this, but your favorite cousin was just killed in Afghanistan today. You'll be getting the telegram in 2 days. And he goes home and he's all bothered by his cousin, and sure enough, he gets the telegram in 2 days that his brother's dead. Or sometimes the father will say something else about a family member. Here's the point. The fella, the son, is near death. The father is dead, dead, dead. He's been there for 10 years. And he says something like, there's going to be a death in the family or something, and he turns out to be right. Or he tells them where something is. They were looking for something that he put away, a will. They couldn't locate it later. They couldn't find some money that the family put away, and the father told them where it was located. They've been looking for years, and he goes right to the spot and finds the spot where it's hidden. Those are kind of Twilight Zone cases, because he's with somebody who's dead, and he's overjoyed to see his father again or his mother or whatever. But there's weird kinds of backup of evidence, but that person's irreversibly dead. So you can't say you were messed up because you were in a near-death state. Okay, those are five categories of evidence: in the room, outside the room, NDEs in the blind, NDEs that are shared by other living, healthy people, and these Twilight Zone cases where the person they talk to them has been dead for a while. All right, why are we doing this today? What's significant? Let me give you three reasons that this is important for a crowd like this. Okay? Reason number one, what do NDE arguments do? Well, your pastor's a philosophical, New Testament thinking sort of guy. He likes those kind of issues, right? And he'll tell you that in the Western world, North America, Europe, our number one philosophical rival is naturalism. Philosophical naturalism says this: the natural world is all there is, there's no other realm. And these are the real radical, angry ones are often the ones that come to come to Christians' blogs and just go off on blogs. And they often come in droves. It's almost like these folks are very acidic, very nasty, and want you to be very nasty toward Christianity after you finish hearing their blog too. And there's a lot of them. And one thing they say is, this is probably the number one objection to the resurrection today: critics have largely given up taking naturalistic theories because they're all like Swiss cheese. They are full of holes. So they don't say Jesus didn't die, disciples saw hallucinations. Very few take those options. Here's probably the most common response: well, there's a problem with your theory. You require another world. So yeah, you might have some evidence for resurrection, but you have to tell me there's an Oz or a Narnia or a Middle Earth. How do we know there's another world out there? So when I'm in dialogues and someone says, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to explain this away, but any explanation is better than yours because you require another world. And when someone says that to me in a debate, I go, time out. Let's talk about NDEs for a few minutes. Richard Carrier, you probably know the name, very, very well-known skeptic. We did this in a dialogue, and I said, time out, Richard, let's talk NDEs. He goes, I don't want to talk NDEs. Well, I'll tell you what, if I were Richard Carrier, I wouldn't want to talk NDEs either. NDEs may be the most, I'd say NDEs and intelligent design may be the two most multifaceted areas that show there's another world. But you could use arguments for God's existence. You could use Jesus was a healer, and we're still having healings today with pre and post MRI, CAT scans, x-rays. You could use that kind of argument to get to the other world. You can use God. I prefer NDEs is the best way to say, the best way to get in and out quickly of there's another world. And if NDEs obtain, if they occurred, then we know there's another world. And if we, here's the first benefit they do. Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, Jews, and Christians all stand shoulder to shoulder. They all agree. They're all happy with NDEs. So then why are we doing this? Because we got rid of our number one philosophical nemesis, naturalism. The number one benefit of NDEs is they show that there is a yellow brick road. There is an Aslan. There is a Narnia. And you go, no way. I've not seen it. Well, according to this recent book, 30 million people just in North America and Europe have. So number one, naturalism is wrong. But now you got to decide between the theisms. All right, reason number two, the gospel. Well, I tell my grad students, Whenever you study the gospel evidence, whenever the gospels are defined in the New Testament, generally these three have to be present. Other things are sometimes present, but these three are there. Deity, death, resurrection of Jesus. We often say death, burial, resurrection. Burial is not there, but about half the time. But deity, death, resurrection. In other words, it's the Son of God who died on the cross for your sins, who was raised from the dead. And the next step up is, if that's the world NDE's evidence, that is a step up for the Christian gospel versus other non-Christian gospels. So it tells us that we're on the right track if we have evidence for another world and it works around who Jesus is. Why? You say, how do we know it works around Jesus? Well, think about this. If they don't want to believe resurrection, and you're giving them resurrection evidence, and they go, why should I believe your resurrection evidence? I don't believe another world. There's NDEs, there's another world. But watch the area. What's the area that's true? Afterlife. What's resurrection? Afterlife. So you've evidenced a field in the area of which we need most of all for the gospel data. So NDE comes to the aid of that last fact that we sing about, resurrection, and now the other religions start falling away from us. By the way, the third one is not about evidence, so I'll just say this quickly. I have studied the world religions and world philosophies my whole life. Not only does nobody come close to the evidence for Christianity, where we have, I often describe them as arrows in a quiver. Not only do we have more evidences than anybody else, most religions, philosophies have nothing by way of evidence that we would call evidence. Ask me about that during the Q&A if you're sticking around and if you're interested. So that, number three, NDEs are incredibly comforting. And you go, well, I never had one. No, but if your mom had one, your dad had one, your sister had one, your brother had one, your aunt had one, your uncle had one, somebody you can really know and really trust. Here's the predominant response to anybody who's had an NDE. Not only are they not afraid to die, they kind of want to. They want to go back. One of the ones that came up in the room just last week was a woman who was delivering her fourth child. Hadn't seen the child, and when they brought her to, she was swinging and saying, let me go, I want to stay, I want to stay, I don't want to come back to this world. It's immensely comforting. And you go, well, I haven't had one. No, but you can read the data from others that you trust, whose testimony you trust. And if you read enough of them, I'm going to tell you, I think it'll have a profound effect on most of your beliefs about peace. To what extent can I have peace? Well, people have been there. I could tell you 100 other stories. But I'll leave you with those three. Number one, naturalism fails. Number two, NDEs evidence the gospel in the sense that they are about the afterlife, and in the gospel is the resurrection, also about afterlife. And number three, they're incredibly comforting. They can help you face death. They can help you face the death of others. I often tell people when they lose loved ones, I'll say, and some of you know my story, I'm remarried, my wife's here, but some of you know that my wife, I won't say first and second, I just hate that, but the mother of my four children, died when she was 43 years old. She died of stomach cancer. And I told my kids at that time, and I still tell people today, weep for yourselves, but don't weep for mom, because she wouldn't come back even if she had a chance. And not only is that NDE, that's New Testament. Paul said, 2 Corinthians 5, he said, going to be with Christ is far better. Philippians chapter 1, verse 23, I prefer to die and be with Christ, which is better by far. I prefer. So it's a great testimony for peace, Paul himself tells us, and it's a great word to go on. So I'm going to turn it back over to your pastor here, and hopefully it's not just about evidence and your assurance about afterlife, but hopefully it'll help your Christian walk. Thanks. Thank you, Eddie.